This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stasio. You know, for a paleontologist, this would be a dream come true.
You know what this is?
The starring role in Jurassic Park? No, discovering real dinosaur eggs. And it happened for a group of scientists led by a North Carolina paleontologist. They discovered a clutch of eggs that are 97 million years old. And they're from a group of enormous bird-like dinosaurs that were covered in feathers and walked on two legs. This is the only group of these eggs ever found in North America. And after a long journey from a desert in Utah, they are now at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences in Raleigh. Lindsay Zano is the museum's head paleontologist. She led the team, found the eggs. And she's also a professor of biological sciences at the North Carolina State University. Lindsay, welcome back to The State of Things.
Nice to be back with you.
Also with us is Terry Bucky Gates, paleontologist, lecturer at NC State, and he's the first person to find the eggs in the field. Hello, Bucky.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So tell me about this. What were you doing and how'd you find the eggs?
Well, I was out in the field with Lindsay Zano, and she got this harebrained idea that we're going to climb a 1,000-foot cliff to look at a set of rocks that no one had looked at before. So towards the end of the day, you know, we were hot and tired, and I just happened to be in the right place at the right time and came over the edge of this hill. And I looked down, and instead of finding the characteristic black bone we were finding, I found huge pieces of eggshell. And at that point, I knew it was something a little bit different, because typically we find very small pieces of eggshell throughout this group of rocks, but these were almost the size of your hand, so I knew we had something really cool going on.
And you could tell right away it was eggshell.
Yeah, yeah. It has a very characteristic texture. On one side, it's going to be smooth, you know, slightly indented, kind of like cracking open a chicken egg.
Mm-hmm.
But these are a little bit different in that they have a very bumpy surface on the opposite side. So,
would I have to have your trained eye to see that, or would I say, you know, that looks a lot like a big eggshell if I saw it?
Well, it helps to have a little bit of training
yeah.
in that, you know, seeing it once or twice. But once you see it, anybody can make that distinction.
Lindsay, why did you want to walk up that cliff?
Well, we've been searching that area for about a decade. It's basically a new ecosystem that's been previously unknown. And so we've been searching for new dinosaur fossils. And we have several new species, 5 or 6 new dinosaur species that we've been rolling out as the research has been going on. We did not expect to find a dinosaur nest. I mean, this is really a rare occurrence.
What do you – I mean, but again, you got to go to these – you're in some inhospitable environments. I guess it's hot there. And then to get to the place you want to go, you got to do some work. Do you have any kind of intuition about, you know, sort of where it might be, or I mean, what makes you want to climb this cliff?
I think we all have the superstition that it's the place you really don't want to go, where you're going to find the best stuff. But you never really know. We've been climbing that cliff for 4 years or so before Bucky stumbled upon that nest, and it's really – it made those 4 years of all that work worth it.
All right. So tell us what we found here.
Well, we have the first nest of this particular type of dinosaur, which you described. It sort of looks like an overgrown chicken. And this is a new species for us. We haven't described it and given it a name yet, but it's the largest species of this kind that's ever been found in North America. It's about 15 feet tall. So you got to picture
a 15-foot
tall chicken. And these are its eggs, and they're enormous. They're about a foot long. They're long, sort of oval eggs. And as Bucky described, they have this really unique bumpy texture to them that tells us what kind of dinosaur laid them.
All right, so what do we know about this animal, and how long have we known about it?
Well, we found the bones of this animal several years ago, and it's still in the research stages, so we're still haven't given it a name yet or announced it to the public, but we now know something about its reproductive biology. So the interesting thing is we just collected this nest a few months ago, and it's under preparation at the museum where people can come and see, look through the glass walls of the lab and see the discoveries as we're making them. So we know we have, you know, at least a dozen eggs lined up in a nest that was about 6 feet across.
Well, how do we know that it's a 15-foot chicken? I mean, how long has that information been around? Who sort of made that discovery? And tell us more about the animal itself.
Sure. The way we know that is from the size of its leg bones. And so we have an upper leg bone of this animal that's about a meter, about 3 feet long. So we can estimate exactly how big it is. But it's still a pretty fragmentary specimen. We only have pieces of the hind limb and pelvis and the tail of this new animal.
And is this the only discovery of these bones anywhere?
Yeah, we only have one single specimen of this dinosaur.
How do we know it had feathers?
We know that by looking at its closest relatives. So we look on the family tree, and all of these types of dinosaurs have feathers. We have remarkable specimens from China that preserve the impression of feathers in these types of dinosaurs.
And this is something that's relatively recent, the understanding that feathered creatures are among our earliest ancestors, right? I mean, the idea that, big chickens were around 97 million years ago.
Yeah, this has been basically a revolution in paleontology, understanding what dinosaur skin and feathers actually might have looked like.
All right. And of course, the value is this is, we think, the transition from cold-blooded to warm-blooded animal, we think?
Yeah, exactly. Birds are animals that maintain their body temperature, whereas crocodiles, the closest cousins to dinosaurs, don't. So somewhere in the dinosaurian lineage, that transformation happened.
Do we have any idea whether or not this particular branch of giant chicken has survived into the modern age? In other words, you know, is this an ancestor to something I might have had on my table recently?
It's a pretty close cousin.
Wow.
So it's a cousin group to birds. It didn't survive. Of course, birds are the only group of dinosaurs that made it through the mass extinction event. But these are very similar. They're convergent with birds. So they have toothless beaks. They have feathers and wings. They actually lay their nests in quite similar ways, and so they have a lot of similar behaviors to birds.
Do we think it flew?
No. No, this animal was way too large to have flown.
This is like a Daniel Pinkwater story come to life. Look that up. Daniel Pinkwater, The Great Hoboken Chicken Emergency. Hilarious book. And it involves a 15-foot chicken. Bucky, what do you do when you find, now you find the egg, what's the first thing that you, or these fragments in the field, what's the first thing you do?
Well, the first thing I did, of course, is look to see where they're scattered about. You want to collect all the fragments from the ground. And whenever we go to excavate, you have to make sure the ground is clean because, of course, we have to start digging. And then once you bury it, it's a little bit hard to go back and try and find all the stuff that you just buried.
All right.
And then the next thing, which really comes a lot of experience, is knowing, number one, where to dig, and then how to preserve the stuff that's on the surface. And so the very first thing I did after making a full assessment of the site was to find the largest concentrations that were still inside the hill. And then we, in paleontology in the field, we put a thing on called a jacket, which is simply burlap and plaster. And so by doing this, I was going to keep all the eggshell fragments together. And on that day, I put it on to protect everything. I excavated what was there. And then when I pulled it off, I found the very characteristic oval shape that was the first egg. And that's what got me really excited.
Could you tell right away that you were in a nest? Because obviously a predator could have just dropped it there, right?
Yeah.
So it didn't necessarily have to be a nest. Do you know right away?
No, I had no idea. So we knew we had some form of egg, at least one at that site. So we left, came back the next year. A group of us traveled up to this site every day for about 2 weeks. And we still didn't know we had a nest. We would excavate around, and we would hit a fragment here and a fragment there, and we finished up everything for our 2 weeks. We were waiting for the helicopter to come, and then we stood at the top of the hill, and we looked down, and we were like, wait a second, it looks like a nest. Because suddenly, after excavating, we were so focused on the rock and chipping away everything, we didn't stop to look at the big picture. And finally, after excavating the whole thing, we recognized we probably had a nest, yeah.
And were these fragments embedded, or were they loose, or a little both?
Oh, they were all completely embedded.
Hmm.
Yeah, but since they were all covered in rock, we didn't know their orientation. We didn't know how complete they were.
Lindsay, what told you that it was a nest?
Well, we didn't really know what we had till we got it back to the museum. Mm-hmm. It's one of the most wonderful things about paleontology is you just don't really know what you have until you crack open that jacket and start cleaning it in the lab. And so we were really excited. We were incredibly hopeful. But until we cracked that top off and started cleaning all the sediment from around the eggs, we weren't sure that we had an in-place nest. And you can actually see the eggs nicely lined up in pairs.
But that's interesting. You were actually back in Raleigh when you determined that you had a nest. In other words, there was nothing about the site itself. They were all nicely cuddled together, the little tiny worm fossils or something. None of that was available at the site. You had to come back.
Yeah, that's right, because it's so fragile in the field. You don't want to expose all the fossil in the field. You're in hail, you're in rain. It's terrible conditions, so you leave it all encased in the sediment. So oftentimes you don't know the wonders of what you have until you get it back to the lab.
All right, now, again, tell me what it was then. Now you're looking at, you've got the case off. Here's the actual object, but it's not in its in situ, right? It's not in the place where you found it. What is it that you're looking at that tells you, oh, that came from a nest?
It's the orientation of the eggs. And so, you know, when we first found these eggs, there were many possibilities. They could have been washed from a nest into a stream and transported. They could have been broken up into pieces. But the nest that we have, you can actually see that the eggs are all laid out in rings, which is how that these animals would go around and lay their eggs two at a time until they had completed several rings of eggs.
How do we know all that? That's pretty interesting. So you already know some of their nesting behavior.
We do. We have remarkable nesting grounds in China. In fact, some museums in China have hundreds and hundreds. They have so many of these nests, they stack them on top of each other and in the exhibits. But here in North America, they're so incredibly rare that this is the first discovery of this kind here.
So do we know anything then about the migration? I mean, I'm going to say migration. It could be maybe it's not the animal, maybe it's the earth that migrated. But do we know anything about why they're so rare here and why they're so common in China?
You know, it's really about the depositional environment, the places these animals choose to lay their eggs. And so this area in Utah where we found these eggs is near the coast. It actually looked a lot like North Carolina does now, back in the Cretaceous. And so it's not a good environment for preserving eggs. And you might imagine if you're a dinosaur and you're laying a nest, the goal is that those eggs hatch. And so you don't get complete eggs. So there has to be some kind of event that actually buries them before they hatch for you to get that kind of preservation.
So it may be that they were plentiful here. We just don't have a sample of their eggs because of the very nature of their nesting sites.
That's right, yeah.
And maybe some clumsy paleontologist that preceded you and messed up the whole site. You wouldn't even know about that. There's no way to check that. So tell us again a little bit more about what we know. That we know a little bit about the nesting behavior. 97 million years old, you think. How long did they remain with us, and sort of where were they in their lifespan on Earth in 97 million years ago?
Well, so the eggs themselves, I mean, we're just beginning the research. We can do a lot of things with dinosaur eggs these days. The technology has improved. We can look at maybe what color these particular eggs were. We know some eggs from these types of dinosaurs were blue and were beautiful colors by studying the pigments that are still found. We don't even know yet if there are embryonic remains inside these eggs. Mm. We have to finish preparing them and then CT scan them, probably at NC State, to have a look inside and
could
see if there are any baby dinosaurs.
Could you extract their DNA and then make little baby dinosaurs? I saw this movie. It's so cool. That's exactly what they did.
No. So, no, we can't do that. Actually, the oldest record of DNA in the fossil record is only about a million years old. Oh. So we've never found anything from extinct dinosaurs to date.
Bucky, what else do we know about this family of dinosaurs and kind of what its life was like, how long it existed before extinction? How much more do we know?
Yeah, so this group lasted for nearly 100 million years. So it was a very long time in which they were around. And what I find is one of the most interesting things is probably a bit about their social aspect of their life. So when you look at them, we find lots of these nesting groups together, which means that they were nesting in a group. They probably lived in a group as well. And then based on some work that Lindsay and I did a few years ago, what we found is that this entire group, which includes everything from like ostrich-type dinosaurs up through Velociraptor, they were all covered with feathers. And then the advent of these feathers probably led to them losing some type of ornamentation on their head, you know, some kind of bony crest and stuff. However, this group re-evolves those. And we have no idea why they're re-evolving them, but because they have these crests and we know they have these fanciful tails, like fan-like tails, kind of like a peacock, but on the tip of a tail, they probably had some complex display behaviors, so they're a really, really interesting group.
Now, they could have lived together in groups, not because they were social, but because that's where the best food was, right? I mean, they all went to the same place because those were the best conditions. Each of them decided individually. Looks to you like they're a family.
Yeah, sounds like you can put together a hypothesis and get to the lab.
Well, okay, so what did they eat? Do we know?
No, we don't know exactly what they ate, but they were toothless. So imagine a parrot, but it being a large 15-foot dinosaur, and with this giant parrot head, had no teeth, had a pointed beak like a parrot, and we have no idea what it ate. You know, typically whenever we look at a dinosaur to figure out what it ate, we look at its teeth. So flat teeth would mean like it ate plants, sharp teeth means it eats meat, and when you have no teeth, what does that mean? I think chances are, and Lindsay, you can correct me, that they're probably plant eaters. Mm. But there's also the chance that they took in, you know, small mammals or lizards as well.
What do you think?
No, I think it's a good estimate. They're a really hard group to figure out what the diet is. And as Bucky said, they have really powerful jaws. So whatever they're eating, they're eating something that's they need a strong bite for. And that's about all we really know.
What else are we going to find out now that you've got these? Tell me how much stuff you've got there, how many eggs you think you have, and what do you think you might learn?
So we have at least a dozen eggs. One of the remarkable things about this site is when we were excavating it, we found evidence of the trees, roots from the trees, and a bank, an old bank with plant material right next to the site. So our goals are to reconstruct what this ancient environment looked like. Where were these animals laying their nests? We want to learn a little bit about their biology. So did they bury their eggs in sediment? Did they bury them in vegetation? Did they sit on them and keep them warm?
Will you be able to tell all that from
the
shell?
We should be able to tell all that from the pore density of the shell, because the embryo needs to breathe through the shell, so we can tell something about the environment and the behavioral biology of these animals, which is what makes something like a nest so special. It's not just a skeleton. It's a record of the behavior of these particular dinosaurs.
And you got to see the behavior of students, because they get to watch you at the museum unpack these dinosaur eggs, right?
Yeah,
what was that
it's
like?
It's been really, really fun just watching people's faces on the glass, sharing this experience with us. I go over every day and see what the preparators have found that day, and so does the public.
Are there preparator raptors? That actually sounds like a dinosaur genus. Lindsay Zano is the head paleontologist with the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences and a professor of biological sciences at North Carolina State. Terry Bucky Gates is a paleontologist and a lecturer at NC State. And I want to thank both of you for being with us. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can find links to their work. We've got photos, by the way, of the dinosaur, actual photos. They're some of the earliest photos ever taken, 97 million years ago, and their eggs at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, and Amanda Magnus. Robin Copley is our technical director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.